understand the concern? What activities? Can they no longer have the power of this in the Act? I mean, in the Act it's clear, we've not changed it. It stands there, they may do this and that. How can they not have the power? How can anyone interpret it like that? No, but I mean, you know, we must deal with reality. You know, a baboon is a baboon. He can't be a half chicken, half baboon. So when we deal with legalities, that either it's true or not. Now, if your staff are telling you that there's a possibility that this can be interpreted wrongly, and they are wrong, then we must surely tell them they're wrong, and not even raise these issues. Because, I mean, in the end of the day, I mean, the fact of the matter is that ordinary staff of yours somewhere that is in a compliance committee have got certain powers to do certain things. This is giving the minister a power to intervene on issues where the people are acting in terms of a listed or a specified activity. And one of the things that she can do is to stop them. Now, how will that ever affect anyone else's power in the department? No, but then you must be a leader, you see. You say, I'm now going to be a leader. Watch me lead you. You are wrong. You are wrong. Because you will have all your power. We're not amending one single word in the Act to take away any of your powers. What we are doing is to make sure that there is a power with the minister, and it's obviously going to be used in instances which are more problematic. And one of the problems I had with this clause was that nowhere was the minister given the power to stop the... The minister is only given the power to rectify, not to stop. Now the first thing she must have the power to do is stop. Shalapansi. You don't do any bloody thing more. And then to get reports and so on. And obviously once the minister or the MEC and that is vested with this thing, then I mean clearly the rest of his staff are not going to act on any other powers and so on. Well, they, you know. So I don't think that's a problem. What I do worry about is when I look at what you've done, is to stop it and then to ask for a report. Now, the problem with this is, and then what they can do about it. They can refuse, they can issue, they can defer. Now the problem with this is on the assumption that they are actually going to work with us. I mean, when we ask for a report and they don't give a report, for example, then we will be, whatever decision we'll make, be making is without that information. Now, I thought that we also discussed the possibility under two of directions and directives. The minister has the power to refuse, has the power to issue, has the power to defer, but also has the power to give further directions and directives to be able to achieve these objectives before she necessarily uses these powers. Now you can't put directives and directions in in Romans 2, because you've asked the applicant to draft the report. But there's nothing here what happens if that person doesn't draft the report. And therefore, I do think that you have to give the minister the power to make directives and directions to try and get things moving when it's not happening. For example, if that person doesn't within the time frame give them the report, will the minister be able to ask another competent authority to go and do a report so that she can make a decision on the matter? Yes? Yes, but that's the whole point I'm making. Now, you've asked them to make a report. They don't make the report. The applicant just doesn't make the report. Now, I mean, obviously you can then refuse it if you want to, but there's a possibility of them getting into all kind of things. Why don't you just give the minister the power under clause 2, the power to make directions and directives? To make sure that where they aren't, I mean, where she needs that power to be able to use it before she refuses, issues or defers. If she doesn't have enough information, for example, the report doesn't provide the information to her, or they give a report and the report doesn't deal with the issues you've asked them to deal with. So instead of then being in a catch-22, because then you can't do anything further, all I'm suggesting, and we suggested it last time, that under sub 2, that the minister is given the power to make directions and directives to be able to achieve the objectives of this clause. Ma'am, at the end. Not really. But that doesn't happen. In practice, that doesn't happen. You know it doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen.
You guys never do these things properly. All the evidence we got from all the submissions of people that came here is that's the whole problem. Is that we're not doing these things. Maybe not you, maybe the MSCs, but that is not being done in practice.
But I think the idea was not to burden this administration process anymore. So if they didn't put in the report or do what they were supposed to do in terms of 24G, you know, it would be dealt with for enforcement, and we wouldn't want to then force people to give information and still kind of come up with a decision to actually legalize, rather just it remains unlawful and then we deal with it through the enforcement process. That is how we saw it.
That's wrong. Give the minister the power to make directives and directions so that if it's a whole big, for example, someone starts building a huge dam. It's easy to say, well, if they don't answer it and so on, then we're just going to knock them down and so on. The problem is there are huge consequences with all of those things. It may be that we find, okay, well, environmentally it's not a bad thing, da-da-da-da-da-da, and one can go with it, but and that one would want to regularize the thing. But this thing that we don't, that somehow the enforcement people have got the power and the minister can't have this power, I mean, it boggles my mind why the enforcement officials below her can have the power and she shouldn't have the power. I just don't understand the thinking around it. But, you know, okay, that's me, you know. These officials below, they were telling us, these What? Yeah, those ones. That they are worried that their powers are now not going to be, because they have all these powers to give directions and directives and so on. Now I'm saying, It's very funny for me to listen to her department. They're happy to give it to the lowly officials to stop and direct and direct. But when you say give it to the minister, oh, no, oh, we're going to burden the pool, we're going to burden the process. Oh, it's going to be too burdensome. I just don't understand how we're thinking as a department. Because if the minister doesn't want to use the directive, no one's saying she must. It's one of the things that she can do before she arrives at refusing, issuing or deferring. It's one of the things she can do. Now all that it does is facilitates processes. For example, this whole discussion we had about all these infrastructure things. Ministers should have powers to be able to move on these things. So I'm not, I'm just saying that the attitude of the department is a funny one. It's a funny one. It's a funny, funny, funny one. I know, DG. Do you think I'm so stupid, DG? Oh. Oh, that you have to explain this to me. Hey, DG. Look, I know I'm looking like a stupid fool, you know? But now you're really pushing it too far, DG. Here is the power to decide whether you're going to deal with the consequences of illegal activity. Now, for me, the consequences of the illegal, and what you're going to do about it, is a decision that gets taken at the highest level. Because there can be huge consequences. You break down the dam because it was built illegally, they take you to court, and there's huge cost implications and stuff and so on. Now, it seems to me that in this case, where the minister is going to exercise that power, you want to give the minister maximum flexibility to be able to do all the things that may be in the best interest of the department. Now, for example, we just want to narrow it to these powers. The minister either refuses, she issues, or she defers. Boom! The minister's got no other power to say, let me have a bit deeper look at this issue. Let me find out more information about this stuff. The Act doesn't give her the power to go beyond when she receives the report from the applicant. The Act doesn't allow her to go beyond that. Now the report is insufficient, it's not good enough, there's not enough information. Now we say to her, make a decision, Minister, you can only do this, this, or this. All I'm saying in my humble little position is just give her a bit of flexibility. Please, please. You've given the flexibility to all the staff below her. Just give it to her as well, please. Yeah, I've never begged any department like this to give the minister power. I've never met a department like this. All it does is you don't do it in... It's a discretion and it's a power she has to give her more flexibility in section 2, subsection 2. That's all it is. Whether she uses it or not, it's not going to affect anyone else's power. Everyone's going to keep their power. It's Lekam. We're just giving everyone power. We're giving them more and more power. Everyone keeps their power and there's no problem. Alright, next one, next amendment. Okay, so those, you just added the deferring one. Defer a decision to issue environmental authorization if the applicant is under criminal investigation for the contravention or failure to comply with section or section da da da. Until the investigation is concluded, the national prosecutor has decided not to institute. The applicant is acquitted or found not guilty. The applicant is convicted by a court and inspector. Applicant has, in respect to the conviction, is also all recognized legal pertaining to appeal and review. Look, in principle, you've got a good clause here, but I think that we need some detail because the problem is you're dealing it only as one eventuality. The only eventuality you're dealing with is investigation. What happens if, for example, the matter is already in court? So the investigation is over, there's now a court procedure. I'm not sure that it caters for all those possibilities. Because it says the time that the investigation is concluded and has decided not to, or there's a case, or there's that. Why can't you defer it before the investigation is concluded? You've only said after the investigation is concluded. Investigation takes 2 years. You can't defer the decision for 2 years because... Do you see what I'm just trying to say? Is that I think you've made it very specific and narrow, and that can maybe limit the kind of things you want to use this for. So I think you should look at the further options. What happens when the investigation is still pending? Maybe that example I used about the court, maybe it's covered under the and that shouldn't be a problem. But I just think that we should make it a bit broader than this, okay? I think mainly the before conclusion is really the problem. You know, while the investigation is pending, that's maybe the problem. Okay, anyone else has a comment on this committee? Seems that this creates more options now and opens up the thing for a lot of stuff. And obviously also the thing that I blame the young lady up there for, that the department doesn't do what they should be doing. I mean, one of the ideas we had with this drafting, and we still have to see whether we've done enough of it, is this issue of trying to be more strong with the issue of prosecution that we actually wanted. Now, you see, probably you can't say you must prosecute, because no one must prosecute. And that is what we're trying to create. He's trying to create leverages, and I think the department has done quite good with this clause, the deferring clause, because that is then putting the criminal system, you know, whether that's the only options. Is another thing. It may be very, because the way it's drafted, it may be so narrow, and even if we widen it, may still only apply to the most exceptional circumstances. Because, I mean, what you're really doing is you're then waiting for the whole criminal system to run its course before you act on the illegality. That's really what it says. But at least it's an attempt to try and show that prosecutions are taken seriously. Okay. So I'm saying that is maybe make it a bit wider, but also we flag it still for further discussion because it may have other repercussions in terms of the options. Although as you look at the options, you'll see there's an or in between. So it's an option on its own that you can follow. And that's maybe where the constraint comes in, that that's the only option, okay? All right, delete sub 3, what is that? It's not important. Sorry? Just talk, I can't.
We just removed the offences and put it...
Oh, it's an offence, okay, yeah, all right, okay. And then now, this is an important one. Explain what you've tried to do here.
Okay, in sub 4, what happened usually, the moment when a person when the department lays criminal charges and we issue a 24G authorization, or even if we accept the application for the 24G, then the NCA is very reluctant to continue with the prosecution. And also when we issue the environmental authorization, and for that reason we just clarify that.
Yeah, but you've got the wording is muddled up at the end there, you see. Because you say, may no way derogate from the relevant authority's legal authority to initiate and then conduct. Well, none of them really conduct. I mean, it's the prosecuting authority that conducts an investigation, or the cops that conduct an investigation, and the prosecutors that... So I think all that you've done, you've collapsed some concepts there in the one sentence. So you should probably say in no way derogate from one, from the competent authority to initiate criminal proceedings or to investigate the matter on their own. Two, to for the police to investigate the matter. Three, for the prosecuting authority to prosecute the matter. So you know what I'm trying to say? To break it up, and then, because, I mean, now you've collapsed the whole, because the relevant authority, legal authority to initiate, that's no problem, but it has got no power to conduct a criminal investigation. So you've collapsed concepts. The police have the right to conduct it, that investigation, and the prosecutors to make decisions of prosecution. So if you break the three up, that the three rights are not affected, then that'll make more sense, okay? But the concept you have there is right. Okay, anyone else want to comment on that one? Anyone? Did you know? This is not giving powers to the minister, so you're happy. Okay, I'm only joking. Don't take notes and don't tell the minister now, please. Errol, please. Kate, please. No stories to the minister of how we're taking our powers away. Please, my friend. Parliamentary monitoring. Let me just say to the parliamentary monitoring group, everything we say here is not true. We're just joking. So, whatever they're going to put in their report, they can't take anything seriously that has been said today. You're safe, DG. Okay, next one.
Chair, on page 60, clause B, that is in the middle of the page, it's D, we have added it was supposed to be yellow. I have alerted the committee when I did a presentation. We have added to be exempted, or that the minister has the power to exempt a project that is of national or provincial importance and is aimed at the preventing or mitigating serious harm to the environment or property. And here it is intended to cover projects like where the cabinet decided that the department must do something about their asset mine drainage, and they are not exempted from obtaining the environmental authorization. They have still to do the investigations in terms, check out in terms of section 24.4A, but it doesn't go to the extent that you have to do a full environmental impact assessment in terms of the regulation.
I'm just trying to understand how it fits into the clause. I'm looking at the clause here, and the clause deals with A, comply with the Act, B, taking into account the following relevant factors, C, taking into account the comments of organs of state, then D, the project is of national provincial importance and aimed at preventing or mitigating serious harm to the environment or property. Is that what the criteria the minister must apply when considering application?
No, this one is only 24M. Capital letter M.
Oh, I'm looking at O.
Yes.
Where is M?
M is page 16 on the brief.
No, I'm looking at the original Act.
Yeah, in the Act,
the Minister of Energy may only grant an exemption contemplated in Subsection 1 as the case may be if unlikely to result in detrimental consequences, the exemption cannot be implemented in practice in case of an exemption is unlikely, and D, the project of national importance and is... You see, Maybe I'm just reading it wrong, man. But, I mean, is D what you want to say? Because the other ones are, granting is unlikely to result in detrimental consequences, cannot be implemented in practice, exemption is unlikely to adversely affect the rights, and then suddenly you've got a D which is like in a different direction. The project is of national importance. We're dealing here with, when will you grant an exemption?
Maybe if we read it from the top, then it reads as follows. The minister of...
No, I know. Just hang on. You see, the problem is, I understand the part that says the project is of national and provincial importance. But the second part is the second part right, and is aimed at preventing mitigation.
No.
Because here they're asking to exempt. So will it ever be a national or provincial project which is actually preventing harm to the environment?
Yes, in the case of acid mine drainage check, you already have a problem and you need to allow for the draining of the water so that you manage the consequences of homes flooding,
okay,
and businesses flooding. So it is to prevent harm to property and citizens. But at the same time, there is already damage that has been incurred in the environment. In fact, this is why we had that provision, because we could not run an extensive EIA process before we allow for the intervention in respect of the acid mine drainage problem.
Project, is that the right word? Activity? Project just seems a bit... I don't know, now I see what you're trying to say. I mean, the AMD is a good example. I can understand what you're saying, is where you want to intervene where there's it's of importance and you want to prevent further... Then you give an exemption that you don't need to go through a whole EIA to be able to do the interventions you want to do. Okay, now that makes sense. Maybe just check the word project, okay? All right, that makes sense to me now, after a long time the penny dropped. Now, you also gave this long explanation about, although we not allowing exemptions to be excluded, no exemptions allowed to be given to for an authorization, but we were happy that exemptions be given to parts of it, not the entirety of the principle, but to parts of it. Where is that thing? You gave a whole explanation. Where? Which clause is that?
It's section 24. Okay.
It's already in the act.
It's already in the act.
In the original act.
Yeah. And they need to comply with section 24.4a.
Which one you say it's? Which is exemption 24? M. What's 24.4a?
Coordination and cooperation between organs of state in the consideration of assessments where an activity falls under the jurisdiction of more than one organ of state, that the findings and the recommendations flowing from the investigation, the general objectives of integrated environmental management laid down in this Act and the principles of environmental management set out in Section 2 are taken into account in any decision made by the organ of state in relation to any proposed policy, program, process, plan or project, that a description of the environment likely to be significantly affected by the proposed activity is contained in such application, investigation of the potential consequences for or impacts on the environment of the activity and assessment of the significance of those potential consequences or impacts, and the public information and participation procedures which provide all interested and affected parties, including all organs of state in all spheres of government that may have jurisdiction over any aspect of the activity, with a reasonable opportunity to participate in those information and participation procedures. So that is A. So they must still do some broad investigation and some broad public participation, but not to the detail and to the extent set out in the environmental impact assessment.
You know what my worry is, that in principle I don't have a problem with this 1A, but the problem is you need to find a way to harmonize 1A, 1 and 2. So you say the minister may grant exemption except, okay? Then you've got a new amendment here that says no exemption may be granted from the requirements to obtain in terms of section 24A or B. So you either create one clause that deals with all three and clearly explains them, because this is also going to, 1A is also an exclusion. But if you now read 1 and 2 together, you wouldn't understand that everything may be exempted except what is except in the except clause. But here you've got a whole complete thing that's not allowed to be exempted. So you need to find a way of drafting that the three of them are harmonized. I think maybe if you draft one clause and you say exemptions or maybe an except, and then you create in one big A that you create an exception, except if it's contemplated in 4A, 2A or B. You see what I'm trying to say? And I'm not making myself clear, because I feel I'm not making myself clear. But the problem is there's now three different kind of exemptions, and they actually overlap, and you need to refer to all of them, or you need to draw them in such a way that you can see that they fit together. I hope you're with me, because I'm not with myself, actually. I don't fully understand. It looks like I had something to drink at lunch, which you know it wasn't true. Yes. No problem. Okay. Five. So just harmonize 1A, 1 and 2. Because you see they're contradictory otherwise. Alright. Okay. You make them so that there's one clause that gives these three exceptions. Alright. That is 24M. Anything else under 24M? Alright. Okay. Then 24O. Nothing there, yellow.
We just defined adopted. That is under the definitions, we defined adopted, and you requested that we move it here.
Yeah. But now, yeah, we're going to just move the bring the definition clause here. Okay. Definition clause. Okay. All right. Section 28. I don't see any yellow.
We haven't made any changes to Section 28.
What is this about? This is just that you can give a directive. The DG can give a directive. It's where someone's causing pollution and you, and the DG now has powers.
Yes.
Now I imagine here the DG would want all the flexible powers I gave to the minister as well. She hasn't asked for it. Advocate Garland, she hasn't asked for it.
She hasn't asked for it.
And Ms. McCourt is not going to push for it.
I think...
we actually, this reads very much like the provision in the Old Environmental Conservation Act, Section 31A, which is actually taking us away from only those activities that have been listed, but give us the mechanism to act against any activity, regardless of whether it requires an environmental authorization. So in terms of those three things that he said, that you can direct, cease, investigate, all of those things that then follow in A, B, and C, actually is quite flexible in terms of all the different things that you can do to intervene on an activity, regardless of whether it has been listed or not listed, for an environmental authorization to make sure that it then is within appropriate environmental management.
Direct. To cease, direct to investigate, direct to commence, direct to continue, direct to complete. All right, that looks like enough powers. If the DG needs more flexibility there, please let her approach me. Everyone happy with 28? DG feels he's got enough power. All right, Section 30.
We have just removed the criminal offences. And then on page 19, there we have actually made provision for the commencement of a listed or specified activity that deals with... in order to deal with the disaster. So it's a completely new provision. We have defined disaster, and the definition of disaster links back to the Disaster Management Act. And then we said a person may commence with a listed or specified activity without an environmental authorization in order to prevent or contain a disaster or to prevent, contain, or mitigate the effects of a disaster. And we clearly state that it's not an offense to commence with a listed or specified activity without an environmental authorization for the purposes contemplated in subsection 1. Now, the reason for this provision is that one, in disaster circumstances where it's declared as a disaster, that you can move in and do... to activities which you normally would require environmental authorization for, that you can go in, do the work, whatever needs to you need to do in order to prevent or contain a disaster or to prevent, contain, or mitigate the effects of a disaster. That is the intention with the section.
You had previously, I said to you, I'm going to ask you for a response. On two occasions had linked it, and you actually said a section in your original input and so on, and then later. And I said this is one I'm going to ask you to explain later, because when I look at the clause itself, it doesn't link it to any section.
In the definition, Chair, It says disaster when used in section 30A has the meaning assigned to it in section 1 of the Disaster Management Act 2002, Act number 57 of 2002.
I thought that's what she was saying, something like that in her input, but she's not remembering that now. She being Advocate Carlo. You see why, I mean, I can't remember, my memory is not so good, but when the Western Cape government came and gave evidence here, they were saying, why do you want to create these extra powers and so on? You can actually link it to these clauses that already exist. And they explained it and it made sense to me then. And I then said to the department, I think this sounds good, we must go for it unless you come and tell me that that's not good enough. And now I can't remember what those discussions were and so on. Now it's worrying me that we've got a clause here that seems quite open-ended again. I'm not sure what listed and specified activities can be done in a disaster, because I thought that, you know, it's building in a wetland or building in a whatever. I don't know. What are you saying now? You're rejecting that argument of the Western Cape.
Thank you.
sounds like a good argument, but then what, I mean, the alternative, you, what you guys have done here is then to make it just completely open-ended. And any person can then at any stage when they are of the view that there's an impending disaster, as defined in the Disaster Act, can then start doing things without authorization, and we give them a foolproof. We actually say that it's not an offense when they do it. Wow. We don't even say it's a defense. We say it's not a, it's not an offense at all when you've done it. Now, I could see that there's some problems with the Western Cape approach, because you'll have to apply them. And, you know, you can't always apply when you're trying to act on these things. But on the other hand, to give it completely open-ended and say that there's no consequence whatsoever, even if they were wrong. Even if they were wrong, there's no consequence. That's what this clause says now. Mr. Wills, you had your hand up?
I mean, if you are going to link to the Disaster Management Act, the Disaster Management Act has been achieved by quite often. So maybe the disaster needs to be cleared, or the potential disaster needs to be cleared. I think quite likely that you're not in the open. But it might be, I don't know the ins and outs of the disaster.
You see, the thing about which I found attractive about, half attractive about the Western Cape stuff, let me say half attractive because I can see problems, is that, you know, nothing, there's very little in life that just, like a river. A river doesn't just go from 0 to 500 feet above the, I mean, it, you know, it rains somewhere and then water comes down and starts slowly rising, and some states say, oh, it rises a bit more than those in the poofies. Now, you know, and I think that that's what the Western Cape was trying to say, is that in most disasters, at least there's some stage whereby you can create a mechanism, a fast mechanism, where you can contact someone in government to say, hey, he's no poofies hier so, and die goed gaan uitspoel hier so, oor die walle. Or the bursting of a, you know, a sewerage thing, and the water is going to run into the fresh water. You know, none of that is like kind of completely, so I must say I'm a little bit, I don't know what the answer is, but I'm a bit uncomfortable with what we got here. Because this is open-ended, and then at the end of it, even if that person wrongly thought they were acting with a disaster, we then say it's not an offense. Have you got it? Then you see, Elf, So then someone comes, a farmer comes, quickly puts up a wall, lets the oil run onto the other farmer's land, not this farmer's land. Now you've got the original person that created the problem. This one, he says then, but that wouldn't have happened. That consequence on that farm wouldn't have happened if this guy didn't do it. So I'm not responsible for it. So, you know, there are a lot of consequences to this. And I really think it seems to me that we need to do more thinking about this. How we want to deal with it, because you know, I think what we've got here is he's galepish. What is the how would you use the term galepish? Yes, ma'am. Suggest something.
The problem is that we sat with is that Section 30, which deals with the control of emergency incidents, it doesn't actually include natural disasters. Now, one option is to widen the scope of Section 30.
And what does 30 do? Is there a permission clause in 30? Which seems to be man-made disasters. And what do you allow there?
Section 30, as Linda put it, is for emergency incidents. And basically what it says is if an emergency incident takes place, you're actually obliged as the responsible person, and there's a couple of different criteria for responsible people. You're obliged to actually take steps to ensure that the impacts of that emergency incident are mitigated. So you're obliged to do that, and then there's a couple of reporting requirements that follow. So you've got to do an initial report, and then you've got to do a report at a much later stage telling us what you've done to mitigate those impacts. So you're actually obliged to take
steps. So, Ms. McCourt, why don't you like that? Because you were shaking your head?
Gee, because in those steps that they are taking, that they are obliged to take in terms of Section 30, you can again evoke a listed activity that require an environmental authorization. So it doesn't take you away from this issue that is linked to the fact that if you commence with a listed activity without an environmental authorization, you have an offense. So here we are basically instructing to take that activity and we'll take that step to mitigate the impact of the emergency incident. If in that step to prevent the emergency incident, they have to do an activity that is a listed activity, they require an environmental authorization, which they cannot commence with that activity before that environmental authorization is issued. So I think maybe what we need to look at is the...
Well, maybe can't we use that and include a step that says, you know, you must try and mitigate as far as you can, but also if there's a possibility of first asking for an authorization that is done in a prescribed manner, and then you can set out a way of a hotline and so on in a prescribed manner where someone can phone DDG Alf Wills to actually get approval to act on something, then you create that possibility. It's not an absolute, they must try and do that first before they take the action, and then you deal with it as a defense.
Not an offense.
Then you deal with it as a defense. Then maybe that's the best that we can do under the circumstances. So, you know, you go through all these steps that they must go through to mitigate and that, but then you create a step also to say, but before they do so, they must absolutely, where it's possible, first comply or ask for authorization in the prescribed manner. We'll do it as broad as that. Then the prescribed manner, of course, you'll then in regulation set out what the manner will be. And there we have to create an urgent way of how you can urgently apply to who you, you know, who do you apply to I don't know if we're going to have it only at national or at national and provincial, and all that will then have to be in that regulation. And you know, so obviously in the case where the person, you know, the water is already flowing over his roof, then, you know, you can't then pick up the phone and say, let me phone the hotline. Well, then we can understand that. But where the river is slowly, slowly rising, and you can start realizing, if you phone someone, say, there's been a lot of rain upstream, and then the guy wants 2 days later, when the real rain comes down the river, then he wants to start diverting rivers into, well, that won't be acceptable, and that shouldn't be the defense shouldn't work then, because they had enough time to foresee that kind of thing. So maybe take that other clause, work disasters into it, and then with these extra stuff we're saying, throw a defense in at the end, and let's see how it reads then. Ms. McCourt?
Yeah, I think we need to look at that, but I think there is one of the fundamental differences in terms of a natural disaster and an incident. The things that are prescribed in Section 30 is where you are responsible as an applicant for the incident happening. So you caused the spill, or you did those. While this is a natural disaster.
I'm not saying, I mean, what you can do is you can draft the 30A disasters and just use from... All I'm saying is don't necessarily put it in 30, but use the principles in 30 and then redraft a 30A, which is disaster, and see what we can take from the other one and what extra things we want to put in there.
See, I think another place that we can look at is, you've just asked us in terms of if we give the DG enough powers in that directive, because there may be some of those steps that we can be included in the directive in terms of investigating and all of those things. It may be also something in terms of a procedural step to also retrospectively rectify if they have done something that they could have done better in the haste.
That's the kind of thing I want to look at. You see, I don't want to have an open-ended power here that people can start diverting rivers and building dams. And, you know, because I know Ma. Yeah. When she reads this, she says, yeah, this river must come close to me. I'm going to move this thing from my next door here, man. Once she knows she's got that power, the ancient was crazy with so much power. What will they be able to do with it? Please, PMG, don't quote that, what I've just said about the ancient. Please. It's off the record. Okay, so we're going to do some reworking there by using 30A, some of these other ideas. I mean, we're going to have to give you guys some time to sit down and think through this. Look at some other jurisdictions. I'm sure countries like America and that, those first world countries, they must have thought a lot about this, because their liabilities are strong and so on. So they would have surely created a procedure that is not as open-ended as this, okay? All right, so redraft. Oh, really? Yeah, I've always said with Katrina and then that New York stuff, you know, the Americans never talk about climate change until like Katrina or that New York thing. Then suddenly, you know, climate change, ooh, it is climate change, ooh, it's on the agenda again, ooh, what do you say about it, you know? And I, you know, when we did the green paper on, I said to Peter, actually, the only time the Americans are ever going to listen, and I don't say this lightly, and I don't want it to happen, but is if like 10 cities get wiped out. To be honest, 10 American cities get wiped out, the first time they'll start to, oh, well, maybe something we'll have to look at. That's the reality of that bloody place. All right. Section 38. Anyone got anything else about this disasters and emergencies they want to add? 30 and 30A? No? Okay, they're going to redraft. And then 31J.
Those circumstances under which they could see
The only thing, I think it's better like this because it creates a reasonable cause. The only thing I think maybe to make it wider, because this is all now linked to offenses, and the only thing that will make it wider is what about when you want to protect the environment, which may not be an offense. So the instance where it's reasonably suspected that damage or that there's going to be detrimental effect or damage to the environment. Don't we want to give our environmental inspector the right also then to seize? Hello? Is there anybody out there? You see, I give it also to the lowly official sometimes, not just to the minister. Okay, because otherwise you're going to be narrowly defined just to offenses. That is an offense, possibly, yeah.
But
it won't be do harm, so then you can use it under two occasions. So if you put it as a also where you're suspecting damage to the environment and so on. Okay. You know, something that may be transported like oil or something that may be transported completely legally and there's no offense committed, but they want to go on an ice road, you know, and then you want to try and stop that from happening. We say, but you're very stupid, you're going to go there, the thing's chances of getting off the road and having an oil spill is big. So there's no offense committed there. There's the possibility of a boat going into an area where they can, you know, also capsize or something and the oil leaks and so on. So there seems to me it's better if they have that wider power that's also linked to the environment, not just offenses. Okay, everyone happy with that? So they're going to do that. Then 15, what is that all about? Section 31N.
15, 16, and 17 is just the work that terminal deviations and added in at the end of the goal. So it's not a real reason, it's just to...
All right, what you must do for me, because I'm not going to check everything, is when you go through the offences clause, do a little note for me just to say 49A1 is now, used to be 41, so that we can just easily link that definitely each one has been moved. Because for example, as the court said just now that in 24 somewhere, if there's one offence has not been moved. So, you know, wat jou goed in trek vir era gaan achter toe. Haal uit. And mark for us. So just do a little memo for me, okay? So we can see which one. Alright, so that was 15, 16, 17. Okay, 18. This is the clause where we gave the minister power where it was previously only a regulation clause and could obviously be knocked out for being ultra vires. So that's all we've done. Yeah, to put this clause. Everyone happy with this? This was in the previous act, which was repealed, and we're now bringing it back again. I think that's the history.
Yeah.
Okay, everyone happy? All right, that's 39A. Then 44. Yeah, that's the whole procedure which doesn't exist.
Yes.
And here you're going to put a clause for me that all regulations must be tabled in Parliament 30 days before. Yeah, but it must apply to all regulations.
Yes.
Okay? So just make sure. Okay, what is 1A? Any regulation made under that must be made after consultation. In AB.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then we must say AB. You can't just say Roman 1. You must say AB. So that must be amended. So not all regulations, it's just those regulations. Okay. Section 47, nothing. What are you talking about?
It's section 47D.
No, I'm talking about 47. There's a clause that talks about...
On page 23. It's copied... section 47, capital D.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm not there yet.
Well, okay.
You jumped the gun.
On section 47, the clause that is referred to here... is where we make regulations relating to environmental management instruments. There was a request from Parliament that it must be submitted to Parliament 30 days.
But what is subsection 2, notwithstanding subsection 2?
Subsection 2 is the general regulation provision that you requested us to amend.
Yeah, but why must we say notwithstanding subsection 2?
Because you wanted to have an exception.
I know we want the section of Parliament. I'm asking, if you say notwithstanding subsection 2, there's something contradictory
Maybe, Chair, if we just read subsection 2, it says the Minister must, within 30 days after promulgation and publishing any regulations under this Act, table the regulations in the National Assembly and the NCRP, and an NEC must so table the regulations in the relevant provincial legislature, or if Parliament or the provincial legislature is not then in session within 30 days after the beginning of the next ensuing session of Parliament or provincial legislature. And then it goes on to say, notwithstanding subsection 2,
I think if you just take all that stuff out and just say any regulation made in terms of, and then you don't even put 4BBA, you just say any regulation must be tabled in Parliament within 30 days.
30 days prior.
So you haven't got all this notwithstanding and sessions and recesses and, you know. Just take all that stuff out. And then, of course, just... I don't know, can we legislate for provinces? The regulations provinces make, I suppose it's regulations made to, in terms of this Act. So maybe you must word it like that to say any regulations made by a province in terms of this Act must also be tabled in their Parliament within 30 days of prior, in their,
30 days prior to final. final publication.
Final publication. So both of those. So just clean all that stuff, huh? So that we've, you know, you may even take all these out of Section 47 and maybe put them just under the regulation clause. And there you just put that all these things must be done like that, okay? Okay, next one, 47D. I'm assuming there's no questions and so on. Okay, on. Okay, 47D. So you just broaden the clause to add a few other places. Yeah. Okay. I don't think that's a problem. It's just technical. All right. Now, the big legal issue. Where's the law advisor? Do we have the opinion on the... I know you've given me a copy, but do members have a copy on the opinion? You circulated it? Where is it? EEP. Oh yeah. Right on top. Mm-hmm. That's where it's EEP. All right, ma'am. It's over to you. This was the whole question of whether the state can be criminally liable for it, something which I doubted very strongly myself. But we're going to hear what the legal opinion says to us. So it's completely deleted. Oh no, then we don't need it anymore. But you say it's in the other bill.
It was in the original bill.
Original bill, yeah, but it wasn't in the first NEMLA or the second NEMLA.
It was in the
one we passed. Do we still have organ of state in there?
No.
So it's been removed from both NEMLAs. Okay, so I don't think then we have to deal with it if it's not there anymore. So then just deal with the state liability, criminal liability.
Of state in the Constitution.
but there are other legislation. But each legislation is sort of saying the same thing, but not the same thing, so to speak. So I've listed the legislations, but there's a couple of legislations, the environmental law legislations, that also have the same clause. And that is in page 4.5 of my presentation, where, for an example, in Air Quality Act, there is a clause that says this act binds all organs of state, which is that too. And this act in the next one, which is the Waste Act, the act binds all organs of state. Basically, what we are recommending to the committee is that maybe what the department needs to do is to look into using the similar clause, because if you include the organs of state, it's clearer than just saying the state is bound. So they have a lot of legislation that are having the same clause but worded differently. That's the first part. I even dealt with the criminal liability part. When it comes to the criminal liability, what I've done, or I've attempted to do, so to speak, is to just compare at first in the background the difference between the criminal liability and the delict and criminal law. Just to give a brief background, which says, if for an example, you've done something to another human being, that's a delict, which means what you do, you will, for an example, your punishment, so to speak, is to sort of compensate the person that you've done wrong with. But when it comes to the criminal liability, it's a state that is being, something has been done to the state. So what it means is a state cannot institute proceedings against the state, which is what we discussed the other day, but I've just looked into that. And therefore, the bottom line is the state cannot be held criminal liable. So that part that's the conclusion.
Thank you. These acts that you deal with, a whole lot of them,
yes.
Are they all under the New Democracy, or are they most of them under the apartheid?
It's a combination of, it's 96, 93, 2007, 2004, 2007.
You see, the problem is, even if they're under the new constitution, they may still be left over from the old act.
They are old ones as well.
The question I want to ask is, why I'm asking this question is, I can understand under apartheid, where you had, where the constitution was not necessarily supreme, that you needed a clause to say that this binds the whole state. But in our constitution, I mean, there's so many constitutional court cases that have even made our officials responsible for rationality. Rationality. Now, it just seems to me that in our kind of democracy and with our kind of constitution, you don't need a clause that says this will bind the state or the organs of the state, because it's very clear that
it
our constitution starts with the constitution is supreme. And, you know, it just seems to me this is a leftover of the old kind of Westminster system that's just not needed anymore. And then you don't even have to get into a debate about criminality and so on, because you know, whatever responsibilities you have under the constitution are going to be there.
I fully agree with you, Chairperson.
This seems to me it's a redundant clause.
It is.
So, Ms. Garland, why would you like to cling to this clause? You and the department. Why are you clinging to?
We just wanted to be clear that because the point is, we might debate here in the committee how we interpret the law and how we interpret the constitution, but we don't know how the courts are going to interpret it, and we just wanted to be clear that.
Who do you think? Okay, let me ask the question differently. Who do you think is going to slip through the net if we don't put it there? No, because that's the question we have to ask. Is there someone going to slip through the net? Then we must make sure that doesn't. But if they're not, I mean, it is so clear in terms of our constitution that there's constitutional supremacy, that absolutely, even the president of this country, when he now makes appointments of people has to prove that he has acted absolutely rationally in doing so. So even the president has to do that. Now which one is not going to, who's going to slip through? Unless these law enforcement agencies of yours that you're hiding and trying to give more power, unless they're going to slip through there. I think we must start breaking this habit. And I don't think we must put this clause. It just it creates so many difficulties in my mind. Yes, ma'am. No, fine, let's do the right thing. Let's just give superiority to our constitution. And we all absolutely can't slip out of it. And the other thing that worries me about it is now that we have our constitution there, there's a lot of those obligations that apply to people outside of the state. And if we only create the obligation strongly on this state, then you start creating, what about if some person in the private sector comes and says, but this doesn't bind me and so on. You know, then you, because the act is only the, so, you know, it just conjures up, that's why I just have difficulty with that clause. So we're going to scrap it. Everyone happy? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm so happy. I think the law advisors are going to be happy also. They're going to be ecstatic. Ecstatic. Okay. All right, 23. Well, 23, what I've asked here is that all the offenses elsewhere be put here, and I've asked Ms. Gallup to just go and say to us, 1A comes from section 23, etc., that we can just mix and max and make sure they're all there. And then if the 24F, there's still offense there, you must move it also here. Are there any other new offenses you've created, other, or are all these that already existed in the Act? Sorry?
No.
So there's nothing new here. Okay. All right. Anyone have got anything to add to that? Alright, just look at there, of course, all of these are not offenses, some of them are defenses. Ms. Gallup, I think you must put the defenses under a separate clause. I don't think by mixing them up. So you have three different clauses, offenses, defenses, and penalties. So we can then look properly at the defenses. Because I see here's subsection 2 is a defense. The others, I think, are all offenses. Am I right? And you may have to now create a clause also for disasters, a defenses clause. And I think we felt that it should be in a separate section, that they don't. So you create the new, and then you'll have to create a defense as well. Because the defense may not be the same as this. It may be. I haven't thought about it. But may not be, because the two may be slightly different, you know. All right. So everyone happy with that? Later on we can check, when they give us the list, we can check if all the offenses have been moved. Nothing new here. And then the two defenses we'll look at when we get the emergency and the disaster stuff from redrafted, we'll just look at the defenses as well, okay? Everyone happy with that? And then penalties? That's all just... any of this new? All old. Where's the 5 million? 10 million.
The committee felt that 5 million is too
that's all, we must make it 10 million at that stage. And that is why 49B1 is different from the rest. For the rest, we have made it 5 million for the first event, second, 10 million for the second event.
Broadly speaking, you don't mind this, but yeah, you know, because what this does, it places limitations on the court that they can't go beyond a certain sentence. That's what you're doing. The only problem with this, of course, is like where you're really talking about big bucks, people with real money, then 5 or 10 million may be nothing for them. And but it's difficult to think of how you create a clause that's going to give the courts a discretion beyond that. Yeah, yeah, no, no, I know. But they can't go above that. So in a really serious case, and I think it's not bad to have this, because what you're doing is you create limits, particularly for the regional courts. There is one way of dealing with it, but I'm not sure if I want to go there. The one way of dealing with it is to say that when a matter is brought in a high court, then these sentences won't apply. They can apply any sentence they want. Then the distinction you are making, because remember, these aren't minimum sentences, they're maximum. So they're not minimum. And what that then allows you, it allows you where you want to ask for more than 5 or 10 million, to actually take the case in the High Court, bring it there, and then ask for those higher sentences. So that's the one way of getting around this. Maybe we'd look at drafting something like that. You understood what I said? Is that these sentences in 1, 2, and 3 will not apply in a case where the matter, where the prosecution is brought in the High Court as the court of first instance. Then it's the discretion to the court to give whatever sentence is necessary. Because that immediately what allows you, when there's a really, really serious transgression, then you just talk to the prosecuting authority and say, we don't want this in the regional courts, we want this in the High Court, and then we can go beyond the sentences that are here. And then this doesn't matter, mess up our sentencing structure here for the regional courts and so on. And that one big case where Ms. McCourt, once she leaves the department and opens up her own oil drilling company, and all the fracking, yes, when fracking comes in and she gets the major contract there with her company and starts just messing up our water left, right and center, that's when we want to grab her, and we don't just want 10 million.
If I recall, in the Environment Conservation Act, there were some provisions that
Well, let's have a look at it. I think
linked to the value of the investment, that's one alternative. Another alternative is commensurate with the value of the impact, the scale of the impact, the value of the effort required.
You can use that. You can still put that in as criteria that the courts must use in deciding on the sentencing. That's a good idea.
And you could do 10 million or commensurate to the value of the cost of rehabilitation.
The only problem with that is that when it comes to court's jurisdiction, a regional court is a creature of statute, and you must be specific. You wouldn't leave it open-ended. And so, I mean, I like those criteria being put in, that when any sentence is taken, these are the factors that must be taken into consideration. But I think that it may well be that the way to try and avoid the problems in the regional courts, which have to have specific jurisdictions, their ordinary jurisdiction I think is 15 years and whatever. Now when you go outside of that, then only an act of parliament can give them that power. So, but it must be specific. You can't do it as an open-ended. So the open-ended part of it, we maybe to get around that, if you just say the matter must be prosecuted in the High Court. If you prosecute in the High Court, you say then these sentences don't necessarily apply, but the criteria apply. Ms. Scarlett, you know that now. You know what I want. You'll draft it. Perfect. I'm so glad you know, because I haven't got a clue what I was just saying. Lovely. All right, and then the rest of it. Then this date comes to effect a date fixed by the president by proclamation. Why wouldn't we want it to give a specific date in the act? You can address me on that, Ms. McCourt. I want you guys to think about it. You know, we had a whole debate here in Parliament, and people asked the question, you know, there are so many acts of Parliament that we've passed that have never been, the mineral ones is an example. So you can get around the will of Parliament, which is the legislator of the country, by this last clause in the bill. Because the last clause puts the power in the hands of the department. Because what it does is, you know what happens in practice, you send a proclamation to the president to say put this act in power. If you don't do it, it doesn't happen. That act doesn't come into operation. Now, what I want to, I'm not blind to the fact that we've got a complex world and it's not always easy to just say the act will come into operation 6 months after the president has signed it or whatever. I'm not blind to the fact that things are more complex than that. Sometimes other things have to be done before the act comes into operation. But I do want to try in this committee to create, as far as we can, the possibility of Parliament taking control of that process. And it's not just left to the executive. And as I say, in this case, I mean, you know, and I'm not saying this in a horrible way, but this mining thing again shows to me how easy it is to just do away with the will of Parliament. A bill comes to Parliament. Parliament says, okay, we'll accept your scheme, but we think after 3 years, this thing must change. That's 2008. In 2012, the two departments go and sit down and agree that, okay, we're not going to agree with any of that. This bloody Parliament's a bunch of woolly wankers, and we're going to do away with what the legislation wants. We're now going to reintroduce it. Now, the way to get around that is to put dates in the last clause of the bill. To say, and I have advocated in the workshop in Parliament that people must start taking control of their legislation and of what's happening. And don't moan that the legislation is getting implemented, because it's in their hands. It's this last clause, the way we draft that, that whether we retain the power, we give it away to the executive. And so I want you guys to look at this thing carefully and see what are the amendments and see what it is that is going to hold up implementation soon after the president has signed this bill. Okay? Yes. Yeah, well, there it was a bit easier because, you know, there weren't controversial stuff. So, yeah. But then also let someone do an analysis of these, the act, and actually see whether they may, some of this may take longer to draft and so on. Because the last thing also you want, the act come into operation, the legal framework, the regulatory framework is not there. Okay. But I do, you know, I do really want to start asserting Parliament's authority a bit on these issues. Now it's 4 o'clock. Members, we've reached the end of the bill. Ms. Golub, is there any other memos about this bill that you had to explain to us, or have you done all the explaining now during the amendments? Now the question I ask you is, we've got all these instruments, why don't we use all the other ones? That's the question that was asked. So what is the answer? But I understood that in terms of this act, that the only tool that's really allowed is EIAs. That the act is not drafted in a way that, although the tools were put in the act in 208, the act is not clearly drafted to allow the use of those other tools. And I was asking, well, why is that? Why don't we want to make it useful? And isn't there just a simple amendment that's needed to make sure that all of it kicks in? Ms. McCourt?
I think the issue is that it's not necessarily only about EIA as the instrument, because there is provision for you to use other instruments as long as it meets the requirements of 24.2a, but then you have to pass regulations on that. And I think those regulations haven't been developed and passed, and the activities that need to be subjected to that for environmental authorization has not been developed. The second thing is, in terms of the adoption of spatial instruments, it says in the prescribed manner, and that manner has not been prescribed. So I think in terms of developing the subordinate regulations to give effect to what the intention was of broadening the base of instruments is the development of those regulations is what needs to happen. Even in the case of environmental management frameworks, for example, the intention was not for it to just inform decisions, but to also use it as a base to exclude activities from the need to obtain an environmental authorization. And that has not been acted upon similarly in terms of the development of norms and standards, etc. So I think it is in terms of the push behind the supporting subordinate regulations, notices, etc., that support the enabling provisions of the Act where there is a lack.
You don't need an amendment.
Chair, there's maybe one or two minor amendments, but I think you need to look at it in terms of you will not get away from, because in the context of Section 24 of the Act, it is all linked to environmental authorizations. So you have to list something to delist it based on a spatial instrument. So you need to look at where you want to use those instruments for other than a control mechanism. So making a norm and a standard similar to the issue that we've talked about, any activity that has the ability to impact on the environment, regardless of it being a listed activity or not, if you are in this sector, you comply with the norms and standards, or you follow this best practice guideline, etc., without the need of going through an administrative process in terms of an environmental authorization. So there's a gap in the legislation between Section 23, which is the objectives of integrated environmental management, and Section 24 that then reduce all of those objectives to an environmental authorization process rather than an integrated environmental management process. And I think that is in terms of the broader influencing, for example,
EP.
Aligning.
EP.
Yes.
EP means where is my amendment? EP. EP. The question is EP. I've now first understood for the first time ever what Ms. McCourt has explained.
Yeah.
But now where's my amendment? Okay, I need two things. I need that amendment so that we can have a look at it. Because if it's just to make it clear, all the tools are in the legislation, but it's not clear enough that you can use some of them instead of others, then it's a simple amendment that clearly can be done. So we need to see the amendment. Secondly, you must draft a resolution to explain all the things that Ms. McCord has just explained. That there are regulations that need to be drafted to make this act work which haven't been drafted. And then we want to say that we give you a deadline of 1 month to report back to this committee on how a timeline for those regulations to be drafted. So we don't leave it in. This was bill was passed in 2008. 4 years later, we're still talking about regulations that haven't been passed. Therefore, you can't use the act to its full extent. Okay, so those are the two things. The amendment, I want to see it. Ms. McCord said it's 4 words. I don't know which sentence has got 4 words in it. Except, yeah, okay, let me know. It's going to swear if I say that. And then the second thing is I want a resolution that this whole matrix of instruments, what it is needed to get them all into effect, that I want to report 1 month after this act was passed by Parliament. I want a report for you to explain to us what is needed and a time frame how it's going to get done. So I can put you to terms. Okay. Mr. Wills, you wanted to add something?
Chair, yes. Just a proposal, perhaps. It seems to me after going through all these amendments that our team had got a bit of work to do. So I was going to suggest that perhaps we should be coming back next Wednesday with the proposed amendments to in accordance with what you've directed us.
Well, we're gonna try and deal with it quickly. Let's not put a date to it.
Okay.
You guys go and do the amendments and then we follow the usual thing is when Ms. Garlop and it's finished, Ms. McCord usually contacts me and says, we're happy with these amendments. We've got a problem here. What did you mean here and so on. So until we're ready with them, I don't want to, you know, you come here next and say, well, we're still researching this issue and so on.
Yeah.
When you guys are ready, you approach me and then we'll have to make some space to have a look at it.
Well, what we can perhaps do is highlight when we come back those 4 words with or without conditions. Exactly where they fit.
Yeah. No, you definitely will have to and then come and motivate her. Because we still, I mean, the members haven't seen the words yet. So it's unfair to accept that accepting the amendment
exactly.
yet. So we still
we'll
have to
highlight them
words.
In red again, you know.
Yeah, the communist,
my other hat on.
The communist version. and then draft this resolution, for the other stuff.
Yes. Well, in fact, Chair, I would suggest to you that this is a three-step process. The one step is that small amendment to enable. The next step is putting the regulations in terms of the current act in place, and the third step is this longer term step, which Lise mentioned about the gap between the objectives and the authorizations and filling in the integrated part. There's a whole lot of provisions in relation to integrated management, not integrated authorization, integrated management, which is missing. And in the longer term, we want to come back to you with proposals and perhaps even come and ask advice as to how to best handle those more larger amendments, either amendments or a new bill.
Oh, that sounds good. In fact, that sounds like a hell of a snazzy a resolution. I mean, no one will ever believe this committee could draft such a nice resolution. So I think we can't, so we're going to ask you to do it. and then exactly, say...
A three-step process.
That, you know, the 2008 Act provided a whole lot of tools.
Yes.
We've not been able to use it to the fullest extent. Some of the reasons, firstly, is we needed to amend the bill. Secondly, we need regulations, and we are suggesting that these sets of regulations are needed, and we're suggesting these time frames. And thirdly, there's this issue of the integrated management, da-da-da, and there we're going to come and approach you later and so on and so on. And just put that in a resolution form. I think it's going to be a lekker resolution, something we can follow up on and make sure we can hold you guys to it. Okay. But we still... But so what we're going to need is, so Ms. Golub, I think actually, I want to say, Ms. McCourt, I actually think you've done a hell of a good work. And when you dropped that other amendment, it took away a whole lot of problems. And I think the legislation is stronger for it. So I think it's a question of tightening up what we've got. Then you guys are going to have to give some thought to that disaster issue. I don't think it's a simple thing, that it's a quite a complex thing. And then these further amendments which we haven't seen, this one amendment, and then of course the resolution. Once you finish with all those things, you're happy with all of it, then you contact me and we'll see where we can fit things in. Okay? Everyone happy with that? Members happy with that? Now, you know, for the first day at work, this is the first day of the committee at work. Of course, we've done a lot of other work, but first, like legislation and so on. We've been very busy since the 1st of January. I just haven't slept. I've been so busy working all the time. But now this is the first day we're actually back at office here. And I think we've overstayed our welcome in this committee. We've been here for far too long. And it's getting cold here with this bloody thing in my ears here. So what I'm going to suggest, we adjourn. We start tomorrow morning at 8:30. 9:30. I saw my secretary almost get a heart attack. She only gets up at 8:30, so it was a bit tough to call her 8:30 meeting. Chileka only gets up then. We'll start at 9:30 where?
S12A.
In the NCOP, S12A.
The big one is red shed.
It's the other funny one, yeah. Then what we'll do tomorrow is we're just going to take a briefing on the ICM, the Integrated Coastal Management Bill, the one that's not still being certified. And then I want to take a first bite. Then there's a second input on the green paper on oceans. And I don't want too much detail. Tomorrow I don't want a dense input. Down the line there's going to be another input when we actually have the public hearings. So tomorrow I just want a taste, let the members get a taste. What is the difference between coast and oceans, for example? I mean, it's not a distinction that struck me as quite, that's why I actually put these two inputs together, because I thought they were linked to each other. Now I hear that oceans have got to do with blueness and coasts have got to do with brownness. Now tomorrow we're going to find out these distinctions. So I want a good input on the bill, so that we understand the bill, but the oceans green paper, I just want to touch on the broad things we're doing, not on details. Baba, I know you like oceans, you like telling me everything. It's 5 degrees in the sea now, tomorrow is going to be 6 and the next day. I'm not worried about that detail tomorrow, okay? Just principles, Baba, just principles. Of the oceans, and that will be the only two inputs tomorrow, so we should be able to finish it before lunch probably, unless you've got 100 questions, Mrs. Kosana. If you have 100 questions, please put them in writing overnight so I can okay, so we should be able. I'm not saying you must plan your things, but I want to try and finish it in the morning so that we can. Is there any other inputs? There weren't any other inputs we discussed, eh?
You asked briefly about the state of the ocean report. So we have something ready that we can just give to you that was prepared on the state of the oceans report, which was the only other related matter that you've mentioned.
Maybe you can just add it, bring it tomorrow, and then just add it as part of the input. Just one or two brief points out of there, okay. The oceans thing I want to take seriously after the budget. So after tomorrow's input, I'm going to give a press statement to say we're calling for public hearings. Anyone that wants to comment on the ocean report and on this other report, the state of the oceans, you're fully entitled. You can get copies from the committee secretary. And then we'll give them a month or two to give their comments, and then we'll have full discussion on the green paper and this other report we have some space after the budget. Okay? All right. So that is just tomorrow, just a taste. All right. Anything else from the members first? All happy? From the others? Now, I must just think about this thing about the bill for next week. Can we, I want to change the program, members. Let's say this. Originally, the program said on Tuesday we've got the Water Research Council with their conference and COP 18. Now, I've tried to move the two. Can we go back to that and have on Tuesday COP 18 and the Water Research? If we are finished with the bill to a state where we are satisfied, we will then use the Wednesday first to go, because this bill is important for us. We'll first go through the amendments, and whatever time is left, we'll do RADISA on Wednesday. Everyone happy with that? So we won't have COP, we won't move COP to Wednesday. COP will stay on Tuesday with the Water Research Council. It will be 1.5 hours each. If the bill is finished on Wednesday, we'll deal with the bill first and then RADISA. If the bill's not finished, we'll just deal with RADISA on Wednesday, okay? All right? Happy? And the DG did suggest RADISA and other streams of waste. Use the occasion to put in the other streams of waste, but not in like full detail. Give us a feeling. Give us a feeling of what trouble you're going to get into as a department down the line. Just give a feeling. Don't give detail yet. All right. So streams of waste on Wednesday and the legislation, but legislation first. Okay. Everyone happy with that, members?
Yep.
Lovely. Okay. Salagatle, adjourn. Please mention my name. You'll get a good seat. Ambani Gazle, Ambani Gakutle.
Yes, it was bedtime.
Hey, you know, hey, you guys must be awake with me, man. Hey, I'm not from around here, man. I'm just a maga me. I kuluma the Zulu, I tete la Xhosa, I hoi the Afrikaans and the Engels.
Hoi.